The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Round 18 began and ended with upset results. But in between Essendon's slingshot dominance and the caretaker coach bounce, lied a giant demolition, a Clarko masterclass, and two touchy umpire decisions that were deemed factually incorrect. We'll address all of the above, as well as give you a comprehensive rundown of what the possible top four, top eight will look like in a few weeks' time. On this week's edition of the Fox Footy Podcast, Ben Waterworth with you. Also is joining us is bow and arrow enthusiast Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max. Why yes. Bow and arrow?
Xavier Dersmer, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, is your favourite part of that, like mine, the head kick that he does, like, as he launches?
Yeah.
That's what really makes it.
I don't want to steal Fair or Fast's thunder, but I like what Xavier Dersmer did.
Okay. All right, well, look forward to hearing that in Fair or Fast. And you just heard the voice, of course, of the quintessentially pessimistic Cats fan when his team plays Hawthorn, Max Lawton.
I mean, I was right, wasn't I?
You were right.
Why are you so negative in general?
Well, at the moment I'm negative because I'm very tired.
Okay, now why are you tired?
I hyped this up before the show.
I'm trying to lead you into it.
And it's not as exciting as it sounds. But so sometimes when you try and do interviews at 5 a.m. with professional wrestlers in the United States.
You did, yeah, that's right. You did tell me this.
Rikishi, or who was it?
Rikishi, actually. He was on TV 30 minutes ago.
Was he really?
Very exciting. No, Roman Reigns, one of the big stars. I was going to chat to him on the phone, so I said, all right, 5:15 a.m., I can get up for that. No, I'll just hang out. I'll go in the kitchen so I'm as far away from the bedroom so my partner can sleep as possible.
That's very caring.
And then I sit there, and after about an hour and a half of not getting a phone call, I'm thinking, they're probably not going to call me this morning, are they?
Right.
So
why didn't you call them?
Well, I do not have Roman Reigns' phone number.
Oh, so they didn't give you a number to call. They had to call you.
They were supposed to get in touch with me. And
that reminds me of a nightclub.
Oh, well, here we go.
This is a Tom thing.
When you ask for someone's number, this is obviously back in the day. You ask
no one calls anymore.
No, you ask for someone's number, and they say, no, it's all right. You give me your number. And know they're never going to call. Or you give me your email in a work setting. They're never emailing me.
This sounds like a lot of personal experience coming to the fore here,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, well, this is the old trick. It's like, no, I don't want to give you mine. You just give me yours. But there's no way that contact will ever be made. And I feel your pain, Max.
I don't get rejected like this quite
Did you
often,
ever
Tom,
sort so. Of punch your number into someone else's phone, though?
There has... Yeah, well... I don't want to go too deep in this conversation. Yes, but that's been done in the past.
Right. Jesus,
yeah.
Just makes sense. Yeah. But who calls anyone anymore anyway?
What is it called?
So the funny thing is, we've talked about this in the office before. I think Julian De Stoop, as the older statesman of the Fox Sports new team.
Geez, he wouldn't like that. Yeah, but factually correct.
Questions why people don't call each other. It's like, isn't calling someone rude and invasive? That's how I look at it. Like, if I want to get in touch with someone, I text them first.
Nah.
It's like I'm knocking on the door. Like, hey, do you mind?
No, calling is personal and potentially a lot more gratifying in the information you can attain and also the relationship you can build. Because you hear someone's voice and you pick up the tone.
Mm.
So when in doubt, text. But if you want to, in a work setting, I'm calling people.
Perhaps this is why you're able to break stories so often, Tom.
Which he did last night on the couch around the Fremantle coaching situation. It kind of leads us into the coaching merry-go-round because there was another layer to this on the weekend with Brett Ratton coaching St Kilda to a win for the first time in a month and kicking over 100 points for the first time in a while. But what's your read on the whole Ross Lyon situation after Steve Rossage on ABC on the weekend said that, you know, Ross is going to be essentially seeing out his contract until the end of 2020? What is that, how you're reading it between the lines?
It's not a lock at all. And people say lots of things. I mean, they sort of have to say that because he's contracted for next year. But my belief is this. If Fremantle were able to line up another coach who they thought would be better than Ross Lyon, and simultaneously Ross Lyon was able to line up another job which he thought would offer him a longer term deal than Fremantle, they would part ways amicably, and that would be how it plays out.
Sort of Brad Scott style.
As I mentioned last night on the couch. But two things have to really happen. Mm. Number one, Ross Lyon has to find another job, and Freo have to find another coach.
So he's not moving unless he's got another job to go to.
Yeah, because he's under contract, and he's a career coach, and I think in his mind, he would be foolish to leave a job when he's got a year left in his contract. But it is at a tenuous position because there is only a year left on the contract, and there is no sign of an extension anytime soon, which creates this sense of tension, but also this sense of inevitability that they're going to break up at the end of next year. And when you know you're going to break up at the end of next year, what we see nowadays with players and coaches is it actually happens earlier.
And it's part of what's driving this, the sort of situations we've seen already where three clubs have spots available, have jobs going for a senior coach, and yeah. Ross could think, well, maybe those spots aren't available for 2020, but they are in 2019.
Yes, and not just three clubs. You've got Essendon. John Worsfold is coaching well, and Essendon's playing good footy, but
that changed.
There's still noise around John Worsfold. There's weirdly noise around Ken Hinckley.
Hang on, there's noise around John Worsfold despite what's happened in the past month?
Yeah, there's still noise.
Right.
Noise is a very vague term, I understand right. that. But there is still, like, there's no noise around Chris Scott, for example. There's no noise around Nathan
His
Buckley.
Team's on the top of the ladder, and that team's in the top four.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there is noise, and there has been noise all year around John Worsfold. I don't think John Worsfold's going to be sacked. I think it's more...
Certainly not now.
If John Worsfold decides he wants to go back to his family in Perth, that's the sort of thing that right. could then elicit... another domino effect of coaching changes. But there's absolutely room for Ross Lyon to get a job elsewhere if a club becomes available. I still think he's a very good coach, and especially in his first 4 or 5 years.
So definitely one that is available is St Kilda. And last night on the two free-to-air shows, that there was definite links between Ross Lyon and St Kilda. And we all know how messy that exit was. And you talk to St Kilda fans now, and they're still not over Ross Lyon's exit from at the end of 2012.
It was St Kilda's fault. I didn't blame Ross Lyon for that at all. And I arrived at the St Kilda in a working capacity a year after.
Yes.
And speaking to people at the club, people at the club at the time knew that they stuffed it up.
Right.
There wasn't actually bad blood towards Ross Lyon from anyone at the club at the time.
But there is some people external to the club.
That's right. But if people understood what happened, that Michael Netterfold, who was the CEO, and the other powers that be were dragging their heels on a contract at a critical time in the club's history when the salary cap was under real pressure and they knew they'd have to get rid of players a year or two down the track, which is what happened in the end, people would understand that Ross Lyon got a deal effectively... I don't know, you wouldn't call it a godfather deal, but a long-term deal from elsewhere, and he just went. And
without telling his manager?
But he couldn't tell his manager. Mm. You know, I mean, that story in itself is interesting. Luke Beveridge doesn't have a manager.
Yep, right.
So if St Kilda was to target Luke Beveridge, they wouldn't go and speak to Luke Beveridge's manager and have one. They would go straight to Luke Beveridge mid-season. Now, how does that look when a club that potentially is playing the Western Bulldogs in a couple of weeks' time is actually speaking to the coach of that opposition club? It's a really interesting dynamic.
Yes, which raises the potential of sort of anti-tampering stuff, which is big in the US sports, Maxi.
Yeah, and you get a lot of that throughout the most recent NBA trade period. I think there's questions around... Kawhi Leonard was sort of linked to the Clippers for so long, and then he finally did move, but it's up to the team that loses him, I believe, to actually complain about tampering.
So
I couldn't see that happening here, but the Ross Lyon St Kilda thing would be absolutely bizarre for me, even if there are people at that club who might want that to happen.
Yeah, take away the emotional side of it, and I get that is a big part of footy,
yeah.
But I think Ross Lyon as a coach would be great for St Kilda.
Yeah, I do as well.
I look at it, I'm like, if I'm St Kilda...
Totally objectively, yes.
If you started in comp now, if I'm St Kilda, and you've got to put aside Clarkson, Longmire, and who's the other big name that's ruled himself out? Oh, Beveridge.
Yep.
Put them...
Both re-signed. Yep. Him and Longmire.
Put them out to one side. I'd want Hinckley or Ross Lyon of the other coaches.
Yeah.
I'm a big man on Hinckley. I think Hinckley...
Even though Port is so consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, but I think he might have run his race there. I think there's a timeline on almost every coach... Clarkson is a massive exception, and the jury's still out whether the timeline on Longmire is fair or not. Yeah. Isn't it? Longmire signed this contract extension, but I'm not sold that Longmire deserved that contract extension.
So it's essentially a four-year, it's a three-year extension on top of the existing one-year deal, and a lot of people in the industry thought, is that a bit too long, that extension?
8 or 9 years is plenty at one club. If you win a flag, you might get a few more on top of that. If you win four flags, you get an indefinite amount. But I really do think that that the whole coaching landscape has to understand that sometimes it's actually mutually beneficial to part ways and get a new voice in.
So two things. One, I think you could the common footy fan could see your story about Ross Lyon and say, oh, he's reporting that Ross is going. That's not what that story said.
Yeah, not many people have said that, though.
Really?
No.
Okay, it's actually been quite a measured result.
I think people quite understand the nuance of the story.
Mm. Okay.
And that's that the noise is real.
Because in Perth...
frustration is real.
In Perth, they are just calling for blood.
Yeah, they're calling for blood over there. Yeah, I've never lived in Perth, so I don't know what it's like, but I think it's similar to Adelaide in the fact it's a two-team town,
yeah.
And the pressure gets... it just gets heated up on the two clubs in that town.
If they're going to miss finals for a fourth straight year, you can understand that. The other one I would say, going back to the Longmire conversation about whether he signed on for too long, that was sort of brought up on Saturday morning on SEN with Don Pike, because he got his contract extension after taking the Crows to the grand final in 2017.
Yeah.
And if he was not contracted for another couple of years now, he would surely be under pressure. Because if you look at Adelaide, I believe they're the oldest team of the round on the weekend.
Just gone.
And you look at their young players, they've got some of their recent draftees who just aren't doing a lot in the sandfall.
And that's also with Sam Jacobs and Bryce Gibbs not on that side as
exactly.
well.
Yeah. So that's age that could be in there.
On anti-tampering, why can't everyone just speak to everyone? Why do we have to have anti-tampering or moral codes that clubs are supposed to
buy? Moral codes.
Well,
that's the thing for a moral code. It comes down to, I suppose, a question of morals and...
Well, anti-tampering is actually laws and legislation. A moral code is up to every individual to decide what their compass, sits.
But anti-tampering comes in from a moral perspective more than
it does,
else.
But there's rules. Anti-tampering is rules, isn't it? It's on a sheet of paper.
This is to do with respecting contracts. And if we have no anti-tampering rules and people can just break contracts, then what is the point of them?
But that's what happens anyway.
To a point,
if one party wants to break a contract, very rarely does the other party not relent in the end. Bryce Gibbs is an exception to that, but in the end, that happened a year later. Yeah. And if a coach wants to break a contract, there is absolutely no way that coach is staying another year. And if a club wants to break a coach's contract, there's no way the coach is staying next year.
So this is a great time of the year because we're sort of looking towards the run home of teams and how the finals might look. But it's also a busy time of the year because we're really starting to enter that period where players are seriously considering their futures and clubs are seriously considering their lists as well. And not a lot of specific names have been thrown out. We all know the stories around them or the speculation around Stephen Cornelio and John Patton. But from your dealings with player managers and what you hear, Tom, is this where things with five rounds to go in the season really start to ramp up?
Yeah, I felt last year that as soon as the assistant coaching merry-go-round started, which is around this time of the year to August 1.
Already started with Essendon already saying that two of them aren't going to be there next
year. Then it really kicks up. But I don't think it really kicks off properly until teams finish. So as soon when teams are knocked out of finals or when teams don't make finals, that's when it's sort of free-for-all and people are a lot more open with their information. And it's exciting. The people love trade period. People love player movement. They see themselves as list managers. That's why it's so popular. They play FIFA and football manager.
Football manager's huge.
And they create their own lists. And when you have an expert, a former player, throw up a scenario, it goes ballistic online because people decide, well, do I like that? What about this draft pick? Or what about this player? What is this player available? Do we need this player? And that's what creates the conversation and that's what feeds the beast.
From memory, last year, it really picked up in the bye week after round 23. Yep. I feel like a number of big names got linked to clubs during that time.
Yes.
And it's almost like that's the point of that bye week now, because it makes no sense for it in terms of the round 23 floating fixture. Because you've got the rest. What does it matter if a team's playing on Sunday or the Friday heading into finals?
It's also a good opportunity to re-sign players, because Dustin Martin re-signed with Richmond a couple of years ago as well. And
I think they like it because you've got a few functions that week as well, don't you?
That's where you really come into your own there, Tom. The club function.
I enjoy the functions,
Let's stay home. Let's have a look just sort of at the landscape of where everything sits from a run-home perspective at the moment, because there were some pretty big winners over the weekend. I think the Giants were big winners, Maxie. When you have a look at the Giants' run-home, they're certainly not out of top four calculations, because this time last week, a lot of people were doubting whether they could be in the top four due to the injury to Stephen Cornelio and loss of game style or unconvincing game style, but things might open up for the Giants now.
Yeah, they've got the easiest draw left, by my calculations.
Across the whole competition.
Can they still win the flag?
Yeah, because
they can.
Because they can finish top four, and if you can finish top four, you can win the flag. Mm. So they've still got Port at the Adelaide Oval this weekend, then the Swans at Giant Stadium, Hawthorn in Canberra, the Bulldogs at home, and then a trip to the Gold Coast in round 23. They should be favoured in all of those. I think maybe Port this weekend is the tough one, and that's one of those where...
Where is that game?
In Adelaide. So what the Giants-Pies game reminded me is how important home ground advantage is. We seem to just count it out sometimes.
Yep.
The Giants have been so much better at home this year.
They do play very well.
With the exception of the Brisbane game. And maybe Port decides to get it together again and then causes that upset, and they're in the mix.
Are you worried about the Pies, Tom?
Yeah, I am, because it's now a pattern. Aside from 45 minutes in Perth a couple of Fridays ago.
Where they kicked two goals ace.
Yeah, they've had a really bad 8 to 10 weeks. And I think Jaden Stevenson's absence has really hurt that team more than we thought. Yep. I think Jeremy Howe's absence before a week or two ago has really hurt. Tom Langdon's out for the rest of the season. I know all teams have injuries. But the Pies are in this window now where we sort of expect them to at least make a grand final. And that's very hard to live up to. I think most teams go through a flat spot mid-year, but this is more than a flat spot. This is an elongated pattern. I think Geelong is more of just a mini flat spot.
Yes. And speaking to Cameron Mooney over the weekend, he was big on that the Cats have upped their training load in recent times, which a lot of other clubs have.
Yeah, well, the Cats fitness manager is Brisbane's old fitness manager.
Right.
And Jonathan Brown was speaking about it yesterday, that they used to go through a process where they used to work exceptionally hard from about rounds 14 to 18 or 19 and then really back off towards finals. So the proof will be in the pudding if they're the fittest team in finals.
Right.
But right now, if you lose too many games, it could affect a spot on the ladder. So it's a real balancing act. But they've got themselves in the position where they can allow themselves to some cushioning.
Do the Cats still finish on top of the ladder, Mackie?
I think so, because they should be favourite in at least four, if not all, of their games. The tough one is Brisbane at the Gabba. Suddenly that could be for the minor premiership if the Lions get the job done. But
that's an exciting game.
Realistically, even as down as the Cats are, and they talked about all the numbers on the couch last night, and they are quite stark, and I think Chris Scott was quite honest saying that they've just took advantage of opportunities really, really well in the first half of the season and have dropped off since. So the Cats have got the Swans at the SCG this Sunday, and they've got Fremantle in Perth. Those are two tough games, road games, but they should still win those.
Should, yep.
Realistically, because those teams didn't look very good on Saturday night. And then North down in Geelong. And,
yep.
And the Kangaroos probably out of it, but they are dangerous. Brisbane at the Gabba, as mentioned, and then Carlton in round 23 at home at GMHBA.
Just on the Lions, so this...
I like the Lions.
I know you have a soft spot for Brisbane, Tom.
Brisbane member, Tom Morris.
But I'm a member, yeah.
We have to... the win over North Melbourne was fantastic, and we'll get to the controversy of the free kicks a little bit later on. But they've got a few big tests over the coming weeks. Not only Geelong, but they also play Richmond, I think, at the MCG.
Round 23.
Which is going to be big.
That was a disaster last year, wasn't it? Brisbane got absolutely pummeled by Richmond
and they like
early on in the season. Oh,
right, yes. Yeah, they did too.
Very different team from them.
It's amazing seeing the Lions second on the ladder. And as you said, they're in the mix to be a minor premier. I know their percentage is down from Geelong, but they're only one game behind. I know their draw has been easier, but all they can do is win against who they're playing against.
So I think the key is they're the most likely team to catch Geelong for first because they play them. Because you beat them, that makes up the gap, and then percentage won't matter if they win all their other games and the Cats drop another couple.
Yeah. What? Or drop one more, yeah.
Yeah.
What is sort of coming to fruition with the Lions now is that it's almost certain, I would think, that there's going to be a final at the Gabba this year. So it's very hard to see them dropping below sixth. So if they finish fifth or sixth, they get a home elimination final
I mean, they host the Gold Coast Suns in round 21. You're going to win that.
Yep.
And then they should win at least one of Hawthorn in Tassie this weekend or the Bulldogs at the Gabba the week after.
Would have been long odds at the start of the BBL. The Brisbane Heat wouldn't play a final at the Gabba and the Brisbane Lions would in 2019. The two narratives around the line, you don't know what to say to that.
It's a cheeky BBL.
Daniel Vittori still involved with the...
No, he's not actually. No,
that was the only thing I knew about.
Moved on. Darren Lehman's their new coach.
Great.
Two narratives around the Brisbane Lions just continue to get pushed forward. One is Jared Lyons, and the other is having experienced coach Chris Fagan and David Noble and Luke Hodge and these guys. And I just find it so interesting listening to people talk about Chris Fagan, how it's great to have a new model of coach and in the NFL and the Premier League and other sports around the world. You have older team managerial type people sitting at the top. And then on the other hand, you have people pushing for Reshaw at North Melbourne.
Yeah.
What is the best template?
Well, does it depend on the list at the moment?
Cause person.
Well, because when Chris Fagan took over Brisbane's list, it was a very different situation to the list that Reece Shaw could potentially inherit, because the Roos are still kind of stuck in no man's land list territory at the moment, because they still have a nucleus of senior and informed players. Higgins, Zeeble, Cunnington are playing very well. Robbie Tarrant in All-Australian contention. Todd Goldstein's had an incredible past month and he's been targeted by other clubs. Whereas when Chris Fagan took over, the Lions were, if not the youngest, certainly the second youngest list in the competition. So that senior managerial role might have worked well. Is Reece Shaw, though, just a totally different case because he is so charismatic amongst the players?
Yeah, it is. But again, you have people saying they love experienced coaches, and then you have Reece Shaw, who's 33, 34.
I believe so. Mid-30s.
Potentially taking the job.
Do you need... And you compare him to David Teague, who's been out of the game from a player perspective a lot longer and has got a deeper coaching CV, yeah. And Reshaw's been coaching for the past 4 years.
Why wouldn't Ross Lyon, if he was picking between the three Victorian clubs, go to North Melbourne? Would that not make the most... I think Ross Lyon could take North to a prelim next year.
Ooh. That'd be cool. You're going to write that off?
Because my voice is irrelevant. Because North Melbourne is playing like a top eight side right now, and we think Ross Lyon's as good as he is. He could get that out of them. North have made a prelim when no one thought they could before. That's the sort of level they could be at. That's the sort of coach they could need. They're in it right now.
I know what you're saying, but I still think Carlton is an extremely attractive destination for any prospective coach.
Long term, certainly, and that's the long term security.
But even next year... I think Carlton could play finals next year. There you go. We'll write off to write off.
Stop making up stories now.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, yes. Carlton's won 4 of the last 6, and they played good footy. And
against a pretty easy patch of games.
But beforehand, there was no such thing as an easy patch of games for Carlton. Every game was hard because they were terrible. They haven't played world-beating sides. They've still beaten Freo in Freo, and that is a... That's a serious effort beating anyone in Perth when you're a team that's won 2-43 before then.
Yep, only fair.
Just the Bombers.
Yes.
What a
4-43, sorry.
Awesome victory over Adelaide on the weekend. Adelaide were terrible again in the second half. Their second halves over the past month have been very ordinary. But Essendon now, that win means they've now got won 4 in a row, certainly at least 4 in a row. And their draw opens up for them a little bit now, which means they're a very strong chance to play finals.
Yeah, I think they probably do at this point.
Can they win a final?
They can, but it depends who they play because top six is very strong. And I think if you look at the Bombers' underlying numbers, they've had a lot of close wins. They haven't been that impressive.
No, I agree with that completely.
I don't think the Bombers can win the flag, for example. I don't think any of the teams there or below can win it. I think we're 6, realistically.
Yeah. I think some couch numbers last night just suggested that the profile that Essendon has played with over the past month during this winning streak isn't a profile of a team that is in premiership contention or, to a certain extent, even, you know, win a final.
No, it's all that back half scoring we were talking about on Friday night. Didn't they score something like 76 points?
76, 79 of 93, whatever it was.
Ridiculous amount. And that's not where you score from consistently when you're a premiership side in this modern era.
It's an indictment on the Crows.
You know what I was going to say? It's more of an indictment on the Crows.
Yes.
And you don't want to be too down about Essendon either because they had a fantastic win. Yep. They're playing very good footy.
Captain was awesome.
Yeah, Zach Merritt.
And Zach Merritt as well.
Zach Merritt was amazing. Yep. But Adelaide and Port, to me, aren't that dissimilar. They're both troubled. They're both inconsistent. They're both very good at their best and really quite poor at their worst. Yeah. And as a result, they're the hardest teams to tip in the comp.
But the thing that really made me understand the Crows for the first time all season was the ladder that was put up on couch last night.
Oh, what a ladder.
The 17-team competition. Because the Crows have played Gold Coast twice. They've won them both by something like 80 points. You take that out, their percentage is below 100.
So this is the ladder minus Gold Coast. So yes. As if Gold Coast didn't exist. So those rounds are effectively buys. A brutal ladder. The poor Suns. But it paints a story, a picture of the Crows as flat track bullies.
And it's a thing where a percentage is a better sign of a team's quality than its pure win-loss.
Yeah.
And the Crows have been fortunate to get the Suns twice already, and therefore they are where they are. At the end of the season, we'll see what they look like, and it'll be a little bit inflated based on those two games, and you can only beat who you beat and all that stuff. But they're just an average at best side.
Average at best. I tell you what's bubbling away behind the scenes at the Crows, and that's Alex Keith's contract.
Right.
He's potentially All-Australian squad, Alex Keith, and he hasn't re-signed, and the Crows need to come to the party in order to get his signature because he's so important for them this year. They haven't done it yet. They can't afford to lose him. That would be an indictment on the club as well.
There's a lot of Crows out of contract at the end of the season at the moment. Hugh Greenwood's another one who's attracted interest from Victorian clubs. Jake Kelly's also out of contract, and he is a much improved defender down back. He's actually been a real shining light down there. But also Richard Douglas, David McKay, Sam Jacobs. So that older crew, we're talking about, you know, oldest list or oldest team in the round, that's a core older group of players. There's going to be some big list calls, and a lot of clubs from reports think that Brad Crouch, is gettable.
Douglas, McKay, and Jacobs all, in my mind, have futures at AFL clubs, but they shouldn't be at Adelaide next year.
Right.
I'd be moving them all on, and not just the Suns, but a club that needs a bit of speed. Like Melbourne and David McKay, that could actually be quite a good mix.
Ooh,
they need someone on the outside. You get him for free. Yep. I know he's got this perception that he's, for lack of a better term, soft. But Melbourne needs soft players. They need a few guys on the outside who can run.
Just some difference.
Some difference. And the Suns could absolutely use... And why couldn't St Kilda use Sam Jacobs?
Or GWS use Sam Jacobs.
Yeah, so... And I think Richard Douglas has certainly got merit as a good character, as a strong player, a consistent leader at a club like the Suns, again. I don't think the Crows should be hanging on to those sorts of players at that age.
If you are the Crows in that situation and you do let a lot of these older players go, are you going into a rebuild then at that point?
Well, it's kind of what it looks like.
Particularly when you're about to get pick three from Carlton.
You can call it whatever you want, but I don't think they're necessarily a lot weaker if they do let them go, those three.
No, but they're not a premiership contender either. And if you're getting rid of players in the back ends of their career, you're certainly not saying that you're not building up for a flag right now, are you?
Well, they've still got enough talent without those three, I think, to compete.
Would you, based on the last 2 years, how can you say that?
No, based on this year, they're no different without Jacobs, McKay and Douglas.
Yeah, and they're an average team.
Yeah, so they're not going further down without them. They're just holding where they are.
But you don't want to hold in the middle of the pack, and they've had an incredible run of injuryless footy.
This is where you and I disagree, because I'd prefer to hold than go to a full-scale rebuild.
I'm not saying full-scale rebuild. I say if there's a chance you could get even more... high draft
isn't
picks.
No man's land a shocking place to be, though, for a list?
But it depends where you are at. Yeah. You are at in no man's land.
Right.
Where you are positioned from 1 to 18 doesn't necessarily tell the full story of where your list is at either.
Are the Crows in the bottom end of no man's land or at the top end of no man's
land? Well, I'm probably more positive about the Crows, which sounds weird based on what we just said. I still think they've got enough good players to be a good footy team, i.e. a top 8 team next year, if they do well in the off-season and get a couple of young kids in.
So would you rather have Adelaide's list at the moment or Port Adelaide's list?
No, Port Adelaide's list. Mm.
Yeah, Port's best footy this year has been much better than the Crows.
And they're young guns. The Crows have got some good young players that they took last year in Chase Jones and Ned McHenry, who I think will come on. But how those three Port Adelaide players have come on, and we'll talk a little bit more about Xavier Dersma later specifically, but how those three young guns, Butters, Rosie, Dersma have come on, Willem Drews, you know, in and out of the side, but really strong Sandful numbers consistently as well.
The funny thing is with Port, they're probably still the most likely team out of the eight to make it. Hawthorn, I think, run is just too tough. The Hawks look really good, but they've still got to play Brisbane, got to play GWS in Canberra and West Coast in Perth. Mm. And they can probably lose one of those to still make it. So that's going to be really tough.
Of the snakes and ladders that were shown on 360 last night, the Hawks have risen the most. They've gone from 15th to 10th.
3 weeks.
In the past 3 weeks.
They've been really taking advantage of some guys. And they beat Geelong at the MCG, the top team. So good on them. But Port play GWS this week. I think if they win that, they're still a chance. Right. Probably not if they don't. And then they've got some tricky but winnable games. Essendon at Marvel, Sydney and Adelaide, North at Marvel, Fremantle and Adelaide. They could win all of those. The good Port should win all of those. Yes.
All right. For more, for a full, thorough rundown,
yes,
make sure you check out the run home at foxfooty.com.au. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it's time for Australia's favourite segment with Todd Morris, Fair or Far.
All right, let's whip through it. Fair or Farce.
You haven't told me what it is.
Tell me whether it's fair or fast to whip through it.
Fair.
Good, that's all I wanted. Now,
what?
Ben, fair or fast, Tex Walker should be dropped this week.
No, fast. I'm not quite convinced that he should be made the scapegoat here. I think there are other players that probably should be dropped first before him.
Okay, ancillary question. Should Tex Walker be under pressure to hold his position?
Yeah, I think he already is at the moment. And he admitted that himself recently. And Ben Hart, I think he said yesterday that Tech wasn't necessarily going to get dropped, but that every player's on notice. He's already under pressure, and I think he's very well aware of it.
Yes.
Max, the AFL is right to come out and say they got the key umpiring decisions wrong after the fact.
Fair. The question, though, is why don't they do that for everyone they get wrong? Why do they not
have... Well, why don't they? Answer your own question.
Well, I'm not the person funding this decision, am I?
Are they stubborn?
I think there's a part of them which is like, well, why do we want to come out and admit our failings? To be fair.
Yeah, but Brisbane North Melbourne game, so the Scott Thompson free was incorrect.
Yep.
That's 1 minute to go. The Oscar McInerney and
Ben Brown
free kick was wrong. That's six and a half minutes to go. Yep. So how far back do you go for it to be relevant towards the end result? And
there's some in Fremantle, Sydney that a lot of those fans are upset about.
So I mean,
can I just say that we get a lot of feedback about umpiring decisions and how the umpiring has a big say on games. North Melbourne didn't lose that game in the weekend due to a free kick. They lost that game because they were scoreless in the third quarter. They didn't score in the third quarter.
North Melbourne fans know that, but it was an important moment in the game.
Emotional fans just get the... Do I want to say non-educated footy fans, the less educated footy fans immediately go to umpiring decisions, and it frustrates the daylights out of me. Look at, if you are a North Melbourne fan and look at the Scott Thompson, and there's not a lot of them, but look at the Scott Thompson decision and think, gosh, that really had a big influence on the game. No, you didn't score in the third quarter.
There's also the fact that teams that win the free kick count more often than not lose games of footy.
Yes.
Interesting. Ben, Farrell-Fass. I love this.
Your own work?
Yep. Using university students at RMIT to do the score review system is a great way for the AFL to save money and promote youth.
Well, first of all, this is a really good opportunity to pump up your own story that you broke exclusively on foxfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyfootyf because aren't they well qualified in terms of the technology that will be available and would be able to do some research, well researched in this area to do it?
That's part of the problem that we've had with the current score review system. It's not necessarily that it's the wrong people, but it's people who don't know how to use the technology quickly
enough.
Exactly
right.
That's the key. Yeah.
So if you're a uni student, if you're a journalism student at RMIT, a prestigious school for that, there's some nice on-the-job training with the AFL as well.
Now, I'm not a sponsorship expert, but what do
Why
you
not?
Think this bunker, whatever you want to call it, is worth on the open market for a sponsor?
Should I call up Russell Howcroft?
Well, it'll be used probably maybe at least two times a game.
What if you just refer? What if we refer to it all the time?
I'm not an open market sponsorship specialist. But
we don't refer to it as the Drinkwise score review all the time, right now.
No.
That's what it's called.
It's just a visual.
And I'm just picking a sponsor out of the top of my head based on alliteration. The Samsung Center. Okay. Now, what would that be worth to Samsung? $100,000 for the year. I would get that money and I would give it straight to Neil Danaher's MND charity.
Okay.
And therefore you have some goodwill around the project and you actually have you create something from nothing effectively. I think that would be a really good thing for the AFL to do. Call it whatever you want, but sell it for as much as you want to sell it for and then give that to charity and pick your charity. I think Neil Danaher would be a good one to do.
Tom.
Fair or fast to myself. Fair. Max, fair or fast, Dersman's celebration was fine.
Oh, completely fair. The furor over this. I think there have been a lot more people saying, why are we complaining, than actually complaining about this. I think Brad Johnson on the broadcast, his comments were, oh, that's great, you love to see that. And then also, I don't know if it's exactly the right time, because they were 3 goals down and they did go on to lose by more than that.
Was it the right time?
You can make an argument about that all you
He wasn't to know what was going to happen later on.
No, that's
true. If you're 80 points down, it's probably not. But 3 goals down, you're in the game.
Yeah, there are worse times to do that sort of thing. And for the broader point of we want players to be entertaining and do this sort of
fun
stuff.
It's very much an Americanized celebration, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pre-planned and he's always going to do it. Yes, yeah. It's very Americanized.
How long will it last, though? Because we had the Mark Williams shotgun. That didn't last very long. It was super entertaining, but that didn't last very long. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't. You know, it's
did you like it though?
No, I didn't mind it.
I loved it.
I didn't mind it, but it's just I question how long it's going to last.
What do you mean?
Well, because I look at the Mark Williams shotgun and it just fell flat and it got a lot of.
Well, Warren Treadray's Call Me.
Reese Matheson brought it back.
Yes.
Yeah, but and then, for one or two times.
And then got mocked by Cade Simpson, didn't he?
I think a shotgun has worse implications because it's actually. No one is actually archering anyone else.
I don't even think.
Is that the word? Is that a verb? It's not a verb.
I don't think it's about the
firing.
The violence.
Yeah.
He's not literally shooting.
But about the principle.
It's just a cool thing.
Yeah, but on a serious note, last week the debate in some circles about Adam Goods's war dance was that it provoked fans because it was aggressive. You know what I'm saying? So the actual action can have implications towards the conversation that follows it.
I hadn't even thought about it. But to be honest, I hadn't even thought about that, but others might have.
Yeah.
And I think they're probably wrong to do so.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm just saying what people are saying.
And all the best.
I love Xavier Dersma. He can do whatever he wants.
Tom Morris, the voice of the people.
Yes. Ben.
Moral compass.
Or fast. Jaden Stevenson was foolish to post an Instagram of himself on holidays with his rig out.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to say fast. But
so he was foolish. So he wasn't foolish.
No, he wasn't foolish, but I still don't. Yeah.
Are you supporting him doing it or not?
Yes. No. Come on, Ben.
Yeah, I am supporting him.
Yeah.
But I don't think it deserves deserve the backlash.
What is he supposed to do?
I don't know.
Is he supposed to, because they lost on the weekend and he's suspended, be sitting at home in a dark room with the curtains drawn looking sad?
No, you can go on holidays.
And the club would have ticked it off. Yes, yeah.
But do you upload it to Instagram? Do you upload it to thousands of people on social media?
The like button is gone now, so we won't even know how many people actually like it.
I didn't see that. That is a revelation.
We won't.
Oh, yeah. He can if he wants. Yeah.
But it doesn't matter about the likes ultimately in the end.
Excuse me. I think if you talk to some Instagram influencers, you'll find it's very important.
There's lots of them in the office.
Well, so would they be very disappointed about Instagram's latest move then?
They'd be incredibly.
That likes aren't public.
Making the argument that their worth is shown by their likes.
You know, Jaden Stevenson gambling on a game or several games, I think it should have banned him for the year.
Yes.
But so I come down hard on matters that aren't just optics. They actually can affect the integrity of the sport. Mm. This is just optics. And you know what I think about optics? I think it's a load of crap. It either is wrong or it's right. And I think this is absolutely fine.
Well, this is why you were very strong on Mac Horton as well. Do you want to talk about
that? Well, I wasn't as strong on Mac Horton.
You were the one person in the office when everyone was talking about it who was like, I just don't know about this.
Yeah, you were all fence-sitting on this. I like this.
Yeah.
So what happened? Mac Horton was in a race at the Swimming World Championships. Yep. Sun Yang, the Chinese swimmer who has been done for drug offences previously, won the gold medal. Mac Horton, winning silver, did not want to be on the podium with him, stood down and was trying to...
The photos are incredible.
Trying to be separated.
It's a silent protest.
Rated its socks off on the website.
Yes, it did.
On one hand, I really respect people who are brave enough and courageous enough to offer a silent protest at a moment where they know people are going to be watching and it's about an extremely divisive issue. So I think Mac Horton deserves credit for that. On the other hand, I think to myself, if everyone in professional sport is at all peeved about particular people beating them who have controversial past and protest as a result, it's going to be a pretty long and drawn out process of actually congratulating those people that win in the end. If I'm Mac Horton, I'm saying everything in press conferences. I'm saying this was not good enough. I don't like what Fina's doing. I think WADA needs to come down harder and the appeal needs to be earlier. But I'm not sure I'm tainting, and I think he is tainting the podium to make a statement about my own beliefs for a person who right now is completely allowed and legal to be swimming in a race.
Yes, because the drug offence, he served his sanction for that. And the other thing about the smashing the vials, that was ticked off by Fina already and Wilder's still got to deal with that.
I can see both sides. I'm not as strong. I'm actually not as strong. But
so fair or fast, Tom?
No, I think he made a mistake, Matt Horton. I don't think it's a horror mistake. I think Jaden Stevenson
still
was fine.
Still fence-sitting, I like it.
Max, jeez. Fair or fast?
Gets
Max
on our back Horton. About it.
Melbourne's drop-off this year is worse than the Dogs after they won the flag.
Oh, fair. Completely fair. Because the Dogs were coming from, realistically, 6th or 7th. I've forgotten for some reason.
Well, Demons finished 5th last year.
Yes, they did finish higher on the ladder. I certainly had higher expectations of them going into this year than I did of the Dogs going into 2017.
Yeah. 17th is a remarkable drop-off. Oh. Look at the teams
below Carlton.
I'd love to look at the teams who finished 17th in past years. I think, by and large, it's either been expansion teams in their first couple of years in the comp or debacles of clubs that have sacked coaches and had clean outs at the end of the season. Melbourne won't do either here. This has just been a
Well, they just re-signed Simon Goodwin a few months ago.
Yeah, they did before the start of the
season. That's the crazy thing about this is that we think that there's sort of this assumption, they'll probably get together and they have a good preseason for 2020. And even I've been thinking that for the most part. But they're that bad, 17th bad. Like, you can understand it if it's like Adelaide in 2018 and they drop to 12 wins. And it's like, you can see why you would say, the Crows will probably bounce back. But, geez, the D's are bad.
If you haven't seen Gary Lyon speaking so passionately on Couch about this on Monday night, I urge you to go and watch it. It's up on foxfooty.com.au. Is he right, Tom? Was 2018 for the Demons a genuine aberration and an outlier?
Well, we're not going to know until next year.
But what do you think?
But so no, I don't think 20. I still have faith that next year will be a top 8 team.
Right.
I don't see how it could possibly be that 2018 was the aberration because they were good in 2017.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you believe there is an attitude at Melbourne that think things will just turn around? Because I know Jared Healy suggested last night that he's concerned about that.
I think there was an attitude before this year that things will just be okay. Because this is what we did last year.
Right.
And this is who we've got. These names on a list are good players. But I don't think that's there anymore. I think this year has been a humbling experience for the club. And I went to a function at a golf club on Sunday.
Royal Melbourne?
No, Kew Golf Club.
Oh, excellent.
Of course.
Yeah. And the number one question I was asked was, why isn't the heat more up on Melbourne? Why aren't people having a go at Melbourne like they were at Carlton?
Not surprised there's a lot of Melbourne supporters at a Q Golf Club event.
It's actually Jonathan Brown's home club.
Oh, is it?
And really? Sampang. But
sorry, just pick those names. Yeah.
Is Chrissy is
Bob's
well,
own Sampang. But it's an absolutely fair question. And the reason I think is because you get a mulligan after you make a prelim. And I think you get a year of grace. And that's what's happened with Simon Goodwin. But there's no way he gets as much leniency next year.
Also, the contractual realities of him getting the extension at the start of this year. And as we discussed last week with the soft cap, you're not going to sack Simon Goodwin at the end of this year and pay him out. No. You just can't afford to.
Yeah, 2020 for the Demons is going to be a fascinating story
absolutely
to watch.
Fascinating, They can't, if they lose the first couple, just watch the Wolves come. Yeah.
Best case scenario, it's Geelong 2006, right?
Yep.
So we'll say.
True. A couple more. Ben Ferrofar. Simon Lethlean, good friend of Brad Scott, should excuse himself from the St Kilda coaching process.
Ooh, that's a really good Ferrofar.
They've been at pains to say that this will not have any impact on this.
That's a farce. I think that Simon has been brought to the club with a lot of faith and trust to do the right thing here. And every opportunity the Saints have had, they have totally dismissed and even, I think, proactively dismissed.
Yeah, Matt Finnis was keen to talk about
that this, like this, there's no preconceived idea that Brad Scott already has the job. Yes, they have a friendship, but I back Lethley in here in this footy sense to have a totally professional attitude to this.
Okay, let me put it to you. And you know I hate the word optics.
Yes.
What if Brad Scott gets the job? How does that look?
Oh, it probably doesn't look great considering the reports that have been going around and the speculation that Brad Scott has already had the job. But I think if St Kilda make a big effort to let it be known that they have gone through a proper
to play devil's advocate, process. Of course they're going to let it be known. Of course, they're going to say the right things.
So, from an optics perspective, that's all they can do.
Yeah, I think if you have someone like Nick Riewoldt on the panel, that would really help things.
Right. So, someone real, not I suppose objective isn't the great word because Nick's St Kilda through and through, but I suppose he comes from the camp that Ross Lyon would probably be a good fit at St Kilda right now.
That's right. Yeah.
Isn't this whole situation with the optics actually make it harder for them to give Brad Scott the job than easier?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not helping his cause.
It works in reverse. Yeah. But Simon Lethlean doesn't just handpick a coach.
No, of course.
This is a process that Andrew Bassett will sit down and go through. And he, as Nick Riewoldt has said, is an incredibly diligent and smart man who is a stickler for process more than anyone else I think I've ever seen in a role.
Do you think we will, as a footy media, ever start spelling his last name right?
Bassat, isn't it?
Bassat with one T?
Yeah. Maybe not.
And an A.
Yeah. Great.
Mm. Yeah. Last one to you, Max. Hi. Nathan Buckley got it wrong by playing Appleby over Goldsack against the Giants.
Oh, wow.
Well, as the selection expert here at the table, I
don't know enough about their team composition to say one way or the other. I did hear a lot of criticism from Pies fans about it, and I would respect their opinions in that regard.
So you would say it was farcical that they played Appleby over
probably. Goldsack. I think this was more about, though, GWS playing a taller lineup than was expected and it working out really well.
The word is that Goldsack is like very, very likely to come into the side this week. And I think Schoenberg had a very good game in the VFL on the weekend as well. So I think don't be surprised if both of them play against Richmond on Friday night.
And that's the end of Fair or Fast.
Thank you, Tom. A very strong addition to Fair or Fast. A few questions coming in off the mailbag this
week.
Yes,
a few people having some...
Yes, that's this thing that Tom...
A tiny mailbag, it sounds like. Let's start with Ryan Litchfield, who asks, what are the Brisbane Lions' chances of being granted a Friday night game against Richmond in round 23?
Well, Ralphie was big on this on AFL Tonight on Monday night, and it doesn't look like it's a good chance because either Richmond or Brisbane are playing on the Sunday before round 23.
Richmond is, so it's a five-day break for the Tigers, even though it
and
is...
travel,
Well, so there's no travel for them because they're playing at the MCG every day from now until eternity, it seems like. But I still don't see it happening, especially when you've got an Essendon-Collingwood game. Like, you can sort of complain all you like about, oh, big club's getting another Friday night game, but that's going to draw the biggest crowd. Mm. So I understand why Essendon-Collingwood... Two teams that should play finals. And if Essendon is at risk of missing... If they lose that game, then that's an even better reason to
have it. You'd like to see the Lions on a Friday night against the Tigers, Tom?
I'd watch the Lions at any hour of the day.
I'm sure you would.
They're great to watch.
Yes.
5 a.m. on a Tuesday morning work for you? I've got a good appointment. Jason Little asks, if Brisbane retain a top two spot on the ladder, is it fair to think they can make it to the granny if they don't have to leave Brisbane during the finals?
Yes. Absolutely. If that Gabba ground is becoming a bit of a fortress for them. They've only lost one game this year, and that was to Collingwood on Easter Thursday, and that seems like a genuine outlier game at the moment. So if you finish top two, my goodness, they're in prime position.
Absolutely, and I think that's a very real possibility. Mm. Josh McMullen has a question about the D's.
Hello, Josh.
Should they try and get Ross Lyon to be their coach for 2020? Or is Simon Goodwin still the best man for the job? It could happen. Contracts can be broken, Tom.
It's not happening.
No. Okay, well, good try.
But I think Ross Lyon should be coaching somewhere next year. I'm a fan of Ross Lyon. And I don't like people say it's a state divide. Oh, the Victorian mafia really likes him and the Western mafia really hates him, and it's a biased thing. I don't know Ross Lyon at all. I just look at his record and I look at the way he's rebuilt Freo. He's put them on the map. Let's not forget what Freo were before he took over. Mm. And they struggled a bit since, but I still think Ross Lyon's got a future in the game as a coach, not at Melbourne Footy Club in the short term.
Probably not. Mal asks, do some journos in the footy media barrack for players to move clubs? It appears whenever a club announces a re-signing, it's met with a muted reception by the footy media, whereas whenever a player requests a trade, journos salivate.
Well,
it's an easy answer, I would have thought.
But it isn't. So when a player re-signs, so I look at this from a public perspective. When a player re-signs, unless it's absolutely massive, like Dustin Martin signing a 7-year deal, that story does not resonate with fans as much as a player moving clubs.
Yes, it is of much more interest to the wider public.
So hence why I think a journalist and a reporter would chase that story harder than a re-signing.
Well, what's more entertaining, status quo or movement? Yes. And movement is always more
interesting. And ultimately, reporters are accountable and are serving their audience. Yes. And if their audience is... The facts are that the audience would want to see a trade story rather than a re-signing.
We see the numbers every day.
Yes.
Trade stories do bonkers numbers. Re-signing stories do not do anything.
Yeah.
It's just the reality of the situation. We're barracking for the story.
Yes.
That's how it always goes. And one more here from Jason Little has another question, in fact.
Johnny Jason. Loyal.
But you send in your questions, you get a chance for this.
That's right.
Are the media starting to turn on Brisbane's success? E.g. Damien Barrett wrote, they've been fortunate with one of the all-time favourable fixtures after his own website rated Brisbane as the 12th hardest fixture in the comp.
Well, didn't the Lions, due to their finishing position last year, naturally get a better fixture?
So. I don't know the exact double-ups they got, but I would suggest that it was an easier fixture. They get to play Gold Coast twice than a lot of other teams. And I also don't think, from that question's point of view, it's not turning on Brisbane to say they've had a fortunate fixture. Mm. This is one of those things where fans get defensive when anyone says anything mildly negative about their club. It's just a fact that they've had a favourable fixture. It's not criticising them or making their wins illegitimate. That's how it goes.
It's a lot of questions about the Lions off the Twitter sphere.
They're the story of the year.
Yeah.
So you understand it.
Illegitimate.
Yes. I'm glad you like my word choice.
It's now time to finish up the podcast with the round 19 tips and cups.
Who's winning the tipping at the moment, Ben?
You are still, but I got 7 last week.
But you're about 15 behind.
Yes, I'm a long way back.
Don't have to worry about that, mate. We don't care what happens in Division 4.
Dearie me. Did you not drop back one because you committed the cardinal sin and changed your tip after team selection news came out and opted for the Sydney
when
Swans?
When Fife was out, I sent an email to you two and Anna Harrington, our loyal colleague who was doing the tips on the website, and I said I want to change my tip from Freo to Sydney, and as we know, Sydney lost by a point.
You fool.
Yeah.
You deserve stupid. That.
The only other person that's done that in the Fox Footy tipping competition this year is Nick Dal Santo. It was the Kangaroos-Carlton game, and there might have been a late out for the Kangaroos. Can't remember who it was. He changed his tip from the Kangaroos to Carlton, and I think the Blues got up.
So. Go with your gut, because the worst thing that can happen is that you change your tip and get it wrong, and then you just feel like an idiot.
Richmond and Collingwood kick off the round in a genuine Friday night blockbuster.
Yes.
This is for the Stephen McKee Cup, former Ruckman.
That's the most important part of this one.
Yes, that's right.
You have to go with Richmond at this point, don't you? And Richmond, again, people keep complaining about all their MCG games. They've played their interstate games before. It's not like they're only getting MCG games this year. Can we stop saying that that's the reason they're going to win the flag if they win it?
Tom, do you agree with the sentiment that the whole season kind of, or the rest of the home and away season revolves around Richmond now and their rise?
I do.
I can
see that argument, but I think the landscape changes on a weekly or fortnightly basis, and I think it would be premature to say that it's Richmond's to lose, for example.
For the point of it revolving around Richmond, I agree, because they play 3 of the 4 teams above them.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
They play Brisbane, they play West Coast, and they play Collingwood, obviously. So,
and in terms of being finals ready, that is the perfect fixture leading up.
Yes,
a real genuine test. Tip?
Richmond.
Hawthorn and Brisbane on Saturday afternoon. This is for the Brock McCauley Cup.
Hawthorn.
So that makes me not want to tip Hawthorn. So this is one I could try and catch you because it's such a 50-50.
Well, these aren't actually my tips. I will email you my tips before Friday at 7:40.
It's not like you to change them. For now, I'm leaning Hawthorn just because of the home ground advantage.
Yeah, I haven't really looked at these tips. So this is just more gut feel, and then I'll go and research extensively.
That's the way to tip. This is at the University...
says the man in Division 4.
This is at the University of Tasmania Stadium.
Ah, yes. Famous Tasmania University.
Carlton and Adelaide. This is for the Andrew Eccles Cup, but gosh, this could have big consequences for the draft.
I'm going Carlton here at the MCG.
The Baggers.
Yeah, they're going to be 5 from 7 after this. What a resurgence.
No, I'm still going to respect Adelaide a little bit more than that and say that they're going
to
win this.
What happens if the Crows lose to the Blues?
They don't get 4 points.
Yes, but Carlton does.
Yeah, does the noise that you dubbed earlier, like, does this grow around particularly the list and pressure on
the list. There's real pressure on the list to turn over at the end of the year at the Crows.
That's one of those ones where if that was the Sunday twilight game and Adelaide lost, they would be the biggest story on Monday. But because it's Saturday at 2:10, maybe they won't.
West Coast and North Melbourne in Perth for the Casey Green Cup, but Tom, it's probably more for the Brady Rawlings Cup, considering the change that's happened in recent months.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have to go West Coast here, surely. I like North, but West Coast.
I just feel like I'm.
Please tip up.
Eagles have been shaky in the past 2 weeks.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I've watched the Eagles. I haven't been impressed. I'm going West Coast because I'm weak and gutless.
Okay. Fair enough. St Kilda and Melbourne. I know you normally like to go for the Stephen Powell Cup here, but this is a tribute to Jamie Shanahan, the Jamie Shanahan Cup.
Oh, yeah. He still has nightmares about the 97 grand.
Played 160 games and didn't kick a goal.
Didn't he?
No. Genuine fullback.
I grew up watching Jamie Shanahan and Anthony Ingerson as a fullback. Oh, yes. And halfback double. St Kilda wins this game, and they do it comfortably, I think.
Wow,
they beat Melbourne at the MCG earlier in the year, and we thought that was a surprise. This is no surprise at Marvel. They're quick, the Saints. They've actually got some speed and some panache about them.
Were they allowed to play with that speed on the weekend?
Yeah, a new coach is always a spike.
Shackles off.
Yeah.
I think Melbourne wins this. Melbourne's been reasonably good over the last couple of weeks. They challenged Brisbane for a lot of that game. They challenged West Coast for a lot of that game on the weekend. The D's are not completely terrible right now, so they should win. And they're good at Marvel now. It's the opposite.
Should they win?
They're favourites.
Melbourne are favourites?
Yes.
Over St Kilda?
Yes.
Yep.
The caretaker coach thing is not some fact.
I'm done. That'll do me. Melbourne are favourites over St Kilda. Melbourne are 17th. They've won 5 games.
That will do me.
St Kilda have won 7 games.
That is... How much are the favourites by? Tell me the odds. Are we allowed to speak about odds?
It's not...
gamble responsible.
Minor favourites. Minor favourites.
I need numbers, please.
Very minor favourites. I'm not going to speak
them. I'm looking at it now.
There's no reason to read them out.
Oh, that is so juicy, I can't even breathe.
Right. Don't.
Okay. That gamble, is unbelievable.
Don't gamble responsibly. Don't. Port Adelaide and the Giants at the Adelaide Oval.
I can't believe they're favourites.
Ninth taking on sixth, and of course, for the Dean Brogan Cup.
This is a really hard game to tip.
Dean Brogan, the man who looks like both mascots.
Or Chad Corns. Yeah.
Yes, I like that.
I like that from you, Max.
Yeah. Not mine. I did pinch that from Twitter.
I'm tipping the Giants in a close one.
So this is one of those ones where you just say, oh, no, Port's no chance, and then they win by 50. Yeah. Who knows? I'll tip Port. Whatever.
It's a very good point, Max.
Western
Bulldogs. I still can't get over the fact that Melbourne are favourites. Against St Kilda.
Yes. Yeah, it's factually
Melbourne
correct.
Are no good.
Western Bulldogs.
They're okay.
The Western Bulldogs host the Fremantle Dockers. This is for the Daniel Bandy Cup.
Good from you. IE? Or what? No, why? Why? Band.
I know why. Band why?
The Western Bulldogs at Marvel. Yep.
Yes, the Bulldogs.
They'll rebound, yep.
Sydney Swans and Geelong for the David Spriggs Cup.
I'm going for Geelong and Sydney.
Yeah, I have not a lot of faith in Geelong, but I have very little faith in Sydney right now.
And the Gold Coast Suns and Essendon, this is technically for the Adam Sard Cup. He's the only player to play for both clubs, but I go on the Josh Toy Cup.
Oh, yes.
Play for Essendon's VFL side.
I think Essendon, and it has every chance of being a Sunday evening schlacking.
Right.
Although the Gold Coast were better against Carlton.
Yeah, they were.
What happens if Essendon loses?
They don't get the 4 points.
They don't get the 4 points.
Well, yeah, they don't.
How bad is that?
I think it's more a case of they don't get the 4 points than Adelaide losing to Carlton because Essendon have got this winning streak going at the moment. But it would be a
horrific loss.
It would be. But they're not losing to Gold Coast.
I wouldn't have thought, but stranger things have happened.
Are Melbourne losing to St Kilda, Tom?
I hear they're favourites.
That's all we have time for on the Fox Footy podcast. Keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.